We were now live to Lebanon to hear a speech by Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
In this great radio of resistance for all of their efforts, for all the difficulties they endured. Of course, they also faced risks. I thank them for everything which they have achieved, for the message which they have sent, and I thank them first and foremost for their faith and their commitment and loyalty. Brothers and sisters, the An-Nur radio station began as part of the march of the resistance, just like the other parts of the resistance, meaning we had very limited capabilities. We had a small number of individuals who worked in this radio station. We had also limited experience. However, we relied on Allah and God, and we had high hopes for the future, and we were very self-confident that we will be able to make achievements and able to bring about victory in any arena whatsoever. And just as the resistance began as a small group, we had a few machine guns, a few hand grenades, a few small bombs. The same goes for a new radio station, one room, a microphone, and very moderate abilities, very limited abilities for broadcast. This was a situation at the beginning. It reflected the clarity, the simplicity, non-complication. And I don't forget that day, which reflected an initiative, just like the beginning of the resistance, an initiative launched from ourselves. I was present during that time at the location. The situation was sensitive. My colleagues called me. At that time, we didn't have the structure which we have now, the official responsible for the executive branch and another branch. We had as well back then limited capabilities, so the colleagues telephoned me and they asked me if I had a radio. I responded and said, of course I do. They asked if I have FM. I responded saying yes, and then they told me, go ahead, put on the following wave or broadcast. I then listened and they told me this was an An-Nur radio station. I asked, who does this radio station belong to? They said it's for An-Nur, which is the radio station of the resistance. Just as the resistance developed on the battlefield, the same goes for the resistance in the media, the radio stations, the same seriousness, the same achievements, the same production, the same loyalty and commitment. And before I go to speak about the Lebanese and Middle East developments, I would like to continue by saying that the media always followed up what was going on the battlefield. So for this reason, we always considered that the media of the resistance, and of course, first of all, the An-Nur radio station, it is part of the resistance. It doesn't follow up the resistance. When I met with, or when I usually met with my brothers and sisters in some rooms or in some locations, I used to tell them that you are working as part of the resistance. You are part of a resistance, just like those who fight on the battlefield, on the front lines. Everybody has his job. Each side has its own role to play. Now, in order not to take too long, of course, An-Nur radio station exerted great efforts, as those who spoke before me mentioned, until we reached this current stage. An-Nur had a very well-known role. Everybody bore witness to its role ever since it was launched regarding resistance, throughout the years of the resistance, until we reached the liberation and the role of this radio station in 2000. Of course, the biggest achievement was in July 2006 and after the July 2006 war. Now, of course, An-Nur radio station must prepare itself for the aftermath of the aftermath of the 2006 war. The An-Nur radio station is part of the media of resistance, and so it is committed. It's not looking for money, nor is looking for investments, revenue, or fame. It is media about a cause, a message. It is happy, it gets sad, it is affected because it is part of those fighters who are fighting on the front lines, and it is a copy of the people who are standing with perseverance in their territories, those who are displaced or who are killed in massacres. And so, because a Nord radio station is part of the media of resistance and the media of loyalty, what was most important of all is credibility. Credibility when it comes to information. The religion of our prophets is a religion of credibility and honesty. Honesty in our what we say, in our intentions, in our work, in our efforts, in our practice. This commitment was very decisive and very important, and it is part of our religious and cultural values and our jihadist values and our humanitarian values. And of course, we always once again renew and say once again, we need to focus on all of this. Sometimes when we have a competition, and I always used to tell our media outlets, we are not outlets for the sake of competing with others. Get out of this mindset, the mindset of rivalry and competition in the media. We're not looking for advertisements, we're not competing with anyone. Sometimes, as a result of competition, and because we are intent to broadcast some news before other outlets, some get involved in lies, some get involved in fabricating the news, in fabricating the facts. Now, of course, this is not only about politics. I'm speaking here technically, in works, professionally. We always said, and we repeat once again, we are people of credibility and honesty. We must be honest. The job of media is to tell the people the truth about the facts. The job of the media is not to create events which never existed, not to fabricate the facts, nor to present falsified information. The job is to give the news or give the information in an honest manner. Let me be clear. Sometimes the colleagues say, yes, broadcasting some news, if it's honest, if it's truth, might not be beneficial for the political atmosphere, might lead to incitement, it might serve the enemy. Okay, we don't have to tell the whole truth. We could be silent, a part of a truth, but we must not lie. When we broadcast news, when we pass on information, when we state the facts, we must be honest. And anyone who imagines or believes that they will survive in this life, they will survive and be able to run away from the law in this world, they won't get away with this in the aftermath. Because in the aftermath, in judgment day, God holds accountable for these kinds of lies more than other lies. Because these lies are more dangerous when it comes to the minds and the hearts and the feelings and the societies and civil peace and the battlefront and issues of fate. Even in psychological war, honesty and credibility, according to our experience and in our news, honesty is a very important strength in any psychological war which we wage with the enemy or which we are involved in with the enemy. And by the way, the Israeli enemy recognizes that the resistance has the ability to wage a balanced psychological war and even a psychological war where we have the upper hand. Why? Because the psychological war which the resistance waged, in addition to its fighting on the battlefield, relied on honesty and relied on the facts. However, those who speak empty words, those who just make empty slogans and empty allegations, and the enemy, because the psychological war is waged against the enemy before the friend, when the enemy discovers that these words are fabrications, empty slogans, and that we have nothing to say, then psychological war becomes only wars, only words, words which have no effect on the enemy. On the contrary, it might lead the enemy to dare go ahead and assault, to come forward and attack, because the enemy would then believe we only speak without acting. What is most important of all in psychological war is to be honest, to be able to wage the strongest psychological war with honesty, without lying even one lie, without making even one lie. And after 33 years of experience in resistance in Lebanon, we have proven this. These 33 years are proof. The dangerous issue confronting media outlets in the world, in the Arab world, and also in Lebanon, because today there are many television stations, radio stations and websites, also newspapers, written media. The most dangerous factor today is dishonesty, fabrication, misleading, fabricating the facts in all aspects, in politics, in security, in economy, in relations, in news. I don't think that throughout the history of mankind, because as a result of the developments in telecommunications and communications, never in the history of mankind have we seen what we are seeing today in the world, due to the capabilities which we have, due to the developments. This level of fabricating the figures and the powers and the peoples and the nations, it's even reached a level of humiliating or insulting the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, or the Prophet Jesus, may peace be upon him, or other prophets, even the Prophet Moses as well, may peace be upon him. States, nations, civilizations, cultures, resistance movements, peoples, figures, fabricating the truth, the facts, wrong information, and they lie deliberately. It's not that they receive this information wrong. No, they deliberately broadcast it or send it, fabricated. They know they are lying, and we've reached this stage today whereby when we look at some of the satellite media stations, or when we read or when we listen to some different media outlets, we hear the news and we have to listen precisely. We have to look at other media outlets or alternative sources. We have to see if there is anything which proves what is being broadcast is correct or not. We then call, we try and find out the truth. Sometimes we hear news about battles in some areas where no bullet has been fired. We hear about big battles in such areas. You are witnessing this situation. So today, many media outlets have now lost their main duty, which is to present the truth, to give the truth, and they are now carrying out another duty, fabricating, falsifying. And in the end, this leaves a lot of negative effects, negative repercussions. In such a confrontation, we must hold on to our honesty, to our commitment and our loyalty. Whatever be the campaign, however the campaign must come, whatever be the harshness of the campaign, we must not accuse others unjustly. We must not invent issues or facts which are not really facts. We cannot invent issues out of the blue, because such behavior leads to fabrication, and this does not satisfy God. We must focus on honesty, because this is the way we achieve victory. The media of the resistance, because this media was committed to the principles of honesty and sending out the news in the precise way, this media was able to bring about victories and be a partner in the achievements. With every step, with every period, our media was following up precisely and in an excellent and told the people, believe in God, believe in your own capabilities, believe in your minds, believe in the minds of your people, believe in the muscle of your people, in the fists of your sons, of your youth, believe in your ability to bring about the achievement and hence the victory. Showing the truth, defending the resistance ever since day one, against the accusations of terrorism and against the accusations of being part of one regional bloc here or there, or being part of one regional country here or there, or the attempts to demonize or to tarnish the image. Now, if some speak about demonization, demonization goes back 30 years. It's a very old issue. In what planet are you living? So the media of the resistance contributed to defending the image of the resistance, the humanitarian image, the ethical image, the image of jihad, the image of sacrifice, the image of standing firm, of loyalty, commitment in defense of a people, of a nation, an ummah, dignity and the sanctities. And on the other hand, the media of the resistance also contributed when it comes to the morale of the enemy. It was a very important part of the psychological war for the resistance movements, and it uncovered the true nature of the army of the enemy. This army, which was described previously as invincible, and God willing, the media of the resistance will continue with such performance and will continue to carry out this jihadist duty. Today, some people get bothered by such comments. The media of the resistance will continue to carry out this jihadist duty side by side with all other parts of the resistance, which look forward with confidence to victory. On such a very important occasion, Palestine imposes itself on me and on you and on everyone. The dangers which threaten the Palestinian cause today, the territory, the identity, because territory might be under occupation, however, it might be subject to 20 years, 30 years, 100, 200 years of occupation. However, nobody will recognize the identity or the nature of the occupation. When we recognize the nature of the occupation, this means the battle has ended for many. The nature and the identity and the people and the thousands of prisoners in the prisons and the Islamic and Christian sanctities, Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque specifically in these days. What is going on in the region, brothers and sisters, helps the enemy, unfortunately. It helps the enemy to take advantage of the opportunities it has. And we must recognize that the enemy is smart. It can take advantage of the opportunities. And unfortunately, we are an ummah which loses a lot of opportunities. And we are not very good at taking advantage of opportunities. To take advantage of the situation and impose new facts on the ground in Palestine, Lebanon, and the region. When the Israelis look around themselves and when they see that those who were silent are even more silent today, maybe if we say that they're even more silent, it's maybe something cruel to say, but the enemy always finds that those who are focused or usually focused on the issue in Palestine are focused on other dangerous matters. So why shouldn't the enemy take advantage of the opportunity it has? It's natural for the enemy to take advantage of such an opportunity. When the enemy finds that the official Arab governments today, and underline this please, today the Arab officials are more ready to give concessions, more than they were before the Arab Spring. Now, after the Arab Spring, they're more ready to give concessions. During the period of the Arab Spring, or the awakening of the peoples, the enemy was in a state of collapse, was in a state of fear and great confusion. And the Palestinian peoples, who pinned big hopes on the Arab Spring, and the same goes for the resistance movements, like us, for example. We all expected that this Arab Spring will lay the foundations for states which will make the Arab official position stronger, more present, more effective, holding on more to the rights, less ready to give concessions. However, unfortunately, those ministers, the image of those Arab foreign ministers standing between them, the American Secretary of State, and amongst them foreign ministers or ministers from the countries of the Arab Spring. And they went ahead and gave a very dangerous concession related to the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian territories. Isn't this something very sorrowful for the friends and something which will make the enemy happy? I will not mention names because we've had enough problems. However, always go back and look at that image of the Arab foreign ministers with the American Secretary of State. Then, what was the Israeli response? Here is a lesson we must learn. You, the Arabs, you have come out of all of this debris or ruins. you push the Palestinian resistance into a corner, you put it into trouble. Syria now is confronting a very, very difficult war. And in Lebanon, you all know how the situation is. So now is the time. Iran, you assume that Iran is isolated and threatened. And so now is the time to give the Americans something which we didn't have the courage to give before. It's not that the Arabs weren't convinced when it comes to giving this. No, I'd like to tell you, and I take responsibility of what I say, the Arab officials are behaving with Palestine and the Palestinian people and Al-Aqsa and the Maqdis and the Church of Nativity and the Palestinian refugees. The officials regard them as a historical burden, not as a cause. The Arab officials were ready to end this issue from a very long time. However, they needed the appropriate circumstance and the courage to go ahead to take such a step. This is the truth. And so for this reason, every time we see some changes, you find the Arabs going where they go to more concessions. They go to giving more privileges to the enemy when they find that nobody is asking questions. The Arab officials, even when it comes to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, previously they said if Al-Aqsa Mosque is touched, then we'll touch the Dome of the Rock, or when Al-Aqsa Mosque is touched, the Arab and Muslim world will do this or will do that. Unfortunately, I must tell you that some leaders of some Islamic movements today, they make speeches in some mosques and they say what Clinton said after the white plantation negotiations between the late President Yasser Arafat and Ehud Barak. I remember back then Clinton said, "My dear brother, I don't know how these people think in the Middle East. They disagree about an old mosque. Okay, we'll give you money to build the best mosque possible." That's what he said back then, Clinton. Unfortunately, today there are some who say the priority is not for Al-Aqsa Mosque. What is the Al-Aqsa Mosque? Some walls and some poles. And the day will come whereby I will mention these Islamic movements and the leaders. The priority now is somewhere else. The priority is how do we kill each other in Syria? How do we kill each other in Iraq? How do we kill each other in Pakistan, in Afghanistan? How do we push Lebanon on the verge of chaos? Even Al-Aqsa Mosque, the most sacred sanctity, or one of the most sacred Islamic sanctities throughout history, they are no longer concerned about it. So what can we say about the Arab officials? How do they think? What's their convictions? What was the Israeli response? Netanyahu, according to one of his ministers, Netanyahu said that this issue of mutual swaps is an issue of detail which will lead to negotiations. That's not the problem. The problem is with the Palestinian people and the Palestinians and the Arabs. The problem is recognizing the Jewish state, Jewish nature of the state. So after, for free, they gave these concessions, the Arab didn't get anything, and Netanyahu went ahead and made this response. He said it's not the issue of details or swaps. Netanyahu said what is required is an Arab official recognition, not only Palestinian recognition, Arab official recognition of a Jewish nature of the state. And the American initiative of John Kerry to the region is to request from the Arabs to recognize the Jewish nature of the state. Now, time won't allow me to call on all of the ulama, so the religious clerics. We must explain to our people and to the public opinion, what does it mean to recognize the Jewish nature of the state? What does it mean to recognize it? The danger of recognizing the Jewish nature of the state, its danger is related to the refugees, to the sanctities. Even it will pose a danger to the Palestinians of the 1948 territories. It will even represent a danger to the struggles of the Palestinians for tens of years. Then they will say this land is Jewish and the Palestinians have taken it, and those who must pay compensation are the Arabs, and the Arabs will be ready to pay this compensation. They are not ready to pay some of their hundreds of billions of dollars. They're not ready to pay for wheat or bread for hundreds of thousands of Sunni Muslims in Somalia who are dying because of hunger, and they are not ready to extend the hand of assistance to the Syrian refugees outside Syria and also those displaced inside Syria, those Syrians who are living a very difficult life. And so the Lebanese government and Jordanian government and others must go and get money from around the world. And the Arabs are also not ready to give real support for the people who live in Al-Quds so that they can stay in their territory. Even if it costs the cost to build one football stadium for the Olympics or the World Cup. However, they are ready to pay compensation for the Jews. When they say that the problem is with the Khalifa and the Muslims, and before the Fath al-Islam and after, when we say that this territory is for them and that it's not for the Palestinian people. Anyway, there are some dangers, very, very big dangers regarding civilization, security, demographic dangers, humanitarian dangers, economical dangers, and all of these dangers must be explained. Some say, what's the problem? It exists, a Jewish state, if they want these two words, Jewish state, given these two words, but two words after two words after two words after 50, 60 years, look where we've reached. One part of the Israeli efforts, and this is what we call taking advantage of the opportunities, the enemy taking advantage, unfortunately. What is going on now regarding Al-Aqsa Mosque itself? Al-Quds is being Judaized today. The Palestinian inhabitants of Al-Quds are being attacked. The Mufti of Al-Quds was arrested for hours. So where are they going? I'd like to tell you there is a real fear, a genuine fear. They could enter Al-Aqsa Mosque and then it will become natural. This hasn't happened before. The Palestinian people paid the price with their sacrifices ever since 1967 until today. The Palestinians, after the occupation of East Jerusalem, the Palestinians have been defending Al-Aqsa Mosque with their own flesh, with their chests, with their women and with their children, just like we saw yesterday. However, in the end, there is no Arab world, there is no Islamic world. You say Al-Quds, then they respond by saying Syria. You say Palestine, then they respond by referring to something else. Now is the time. The enemy believes now is the time to go and impose a new reality on Al-Aqsa Mosque, just like what happened before in another holy site. Then, after one problem and one other problems, then we reach a settlement, for example, half of the mosque is for the Muslims and the other half is for the Jews, and they might accept it. This is a real fear today. Before speaking about destroying a mosque, the mosque being stolen or exported, this is a fear. How should we confront this, and how should it be confronted? How can it be confronted? This requires a big stance. I'll refer to it at the end of my speech. However, the question which must be repeated after 65 years for the Palestinian people, every Palestinian brother and sister, the Palestinian people of perseverance and jihad, of sacrifice, the honorable Palestinian people who have put up with what nobody could put up with, the Palestinians who have been left for decades, the Palestinians who have been traded or used for business dealings. Now, after 65 years, what should we rely on? Should we rely on the Arab officials only because some names changed or some people changed? What should we rely on? Or shouldn't we reconsider? Shouldn't we reconsider? Just as I said, let's stay away. Put the details aside and go to the top of the mountain. Let's put aside our own affiliations, our own hatred towards one another. Put aside our own divisions and look, let's go to the top of the mountain and take a look and ask, where is Palestine going to? Where is Lebanon headed? Where is Syria headed? Where is Iraq headed? Where is the region headed? Where is Jordan headed? Where is the whole region headed? And we must decide what stance we shall take. Of course, in light of such an unfortunate situation in the Arab world or the Arab official world, we must point to the stance taken by the Jordanian parliament. I salute the stance or the step taken by the Jordanian parliament to vote, of course, on to expel the Israeli ambassador. However, such a stance from the Jordanian parliament is a very strong step. In addition, when it comes to taking advantage of the opportunities, here I want to refer to Syria and a subject which I must mention. It's not that I can't mention it, I have to mention it. The last Israeli aggression on Syria. You all saw and you heard the analysis, you heard the stances. However, at the beginning of this point, I'd like to call for underscoring or taking a look at the regional situation, the current conflict in the region, the challenges in the region. The enemy comes and bombs the outskirts of Damascus. A number of raids, which we all saw on the media. Everybody must stop and take a look here. The Israelis, unfortunately, spoke about the enemy of the enemy and the friend of the friend. Okay, what are we? This is our Islamic rhetoric. This is the language which we use. This enemy, isn't it the most important issue? Anyway, I want to go to the essence of the subject. The Israelis, when they went ahead with these air raids, of course, they have goals they want to achieve. And always, in light of all the events, the enemy tries to achieve its goals in the midst of the events taking place. I want to describe this reality to speak about the nature of the response. Let's understand, try and understand the nature of the response. The enemy's goals always, especially over the last 2 years, one of the goals of the enemies and the goals of others as well is for Syria to be out of the circle of the resistance against Israel or the conflict with Israel. First of all, there is no peace accord between Syria and Israel. There is a period of calm, yes. However, Syria, the enemy knows this before the friend, and maybe the enemy knows this more than the friend. The enemy knows what Syria gave the resistance movements for decades, especially over the past few years, the resistance in Lebanon, in Palestine specifically. And if the day comes whereby our brothers in the Palestinian resistance will state on the podiums what they say in private sessions, they will say throughout history of the Arab regimes, never did one Arab government give what the government of Bashar al-Assad gave us. This is what Palestinian resistance leaders say in private sessions. If they excuse me, some of them might say I'm putting them in a corner. Anyway, this is the time to speak, to state what is right. The Israelis know that the source of strength of resistance in Lebanon and in Palestine, one of the most important sources of strength, is Syria and, of course, the Islamic Republic of Iran. But here we're talking about Syria. And so the enemy wants Syria to be out of the equation. And the enemy wants to isolate the resistance in Palestine and in Lebanon. Okay, the resistance in Palestine, let's put it aside. There are some developments. However, the resistance in Lebanon, they want to isolate it. What does it mean by isolating the resistance in Lebanon? According to their own terms, any financial support, moral support, any support by arms from those who support the resistance must stop this support, must cut this support off. I want to go along. I want to assume what the Israelis said. Israel, what are the Israelis saying regarding Syria and the resistance in Lebanon? The Israelis are saying that in one stage they said that we will not allow, we the Israelis won't allow weapons which break the balance of fear to reach the resistance in Lebanon. Now the enemy is speaking about something else. The enemy is now saying, I will prevent the resistance in Lebanon from increasing its capabilities, meaning even these weapons which you possess, I won't allow you to add more weapons to these weapons. This is what it means when we speak about increasing the abilities or capabilities. So hence, they launched the raid on Damascus and the outskirts of Damascus. Why? To tell the Syria, here, I want you to focus, to understand the Syrian response, the magnitude and the nature of the Syrian response. Let's now set the details aside and speak strategically. What are the Israelis saying to the Syrians? They are saying that regardless of the targets or the locations which were targeted in Syria, I'm not the one who should speak about the targets on Syrian territory. This should be left for the Syrian leadership and the Syrian government. The Israelis want to say, based upon the Israeli assumptions and what they said, the Israelis are saying that continuing support of the resistance or providing supplies for the resistance means that the government will fall and means declaring war on Syria. And so the real goal for the Israeli air raids is to make Syria bow down, to actually target the will of the Syrian people and leadership and take it out of the circle of resistance against the enemy. If you want to fight against each other as Syrians, okay, but I and as Israeli, this issue must end. The aim of the goal, the aim of the air raid is for Syria to completely get out of the equation of resistance against Israel. And by the way, between brackets, everything you heard on the media, 300 martyrs, 200 martyrs, all of this is a lie, unfortunately. We hear on the media exaggerations because the Israeli Air Force is targeting some bases or some sites or some Syrian locations. This is something which is very unfortunate. Of course, they spoke about 300. There are only four martyrs, according to my correct information, four or five martyrs, military personnel who were guarding these locations from the Syrian army. This was the goal of the aggression. When it comes to the response, what should the response be? First of all, we must prevent the enemy from achieving the goals of the air raids. And anyway, in the resistance movements, in such movements, the least we can do is to prevent the goals of the assault or aggression from being achieved. And if possible, to make this backfire against the enemy. And this is what the Syrian leadership actually did. How? Of course, there are some who want Syria to go up and bomb occupied Palestine, and some who are full of hatred, they also want Syria to go and bomb occupied Palestine. There are some who love Syria, they have their own morale, and there are some who hate Syria, they want Syria to go ahead and bomb occupied Palestine to create a war between Syria and Israel for all hell to break loose. This is what is said on the street, what is strategically said, what is tactically said. The Syrian response. Now listen, the first response was that you the Israelis, I'm going to say it in simple language, not only for the people here in front of me, but people everywhere, in simple language, you the Israelis, you are saying that your goal from the aggression is to prevent the resistance from improving or increasing its capabilities. So the first response, be aware, you the Israelis, if you consider Syria the passageway for arms for the resistance, Syria will give arms to the resistance. This is very important strategically. And I'd like to even add, if you, the Israelis, if you allege that your aggression, the aim of this aggression, is to prevent the resistance from increasing its capabilities, Syria will give the resistance unique weapons. Unique weapons. It's not only about increasing capabilities, it's about breaking the balance. Who is this leadership? Please, Inform me today, is there any Arab government which has the courage officially to provide one shotgun to the Palestinian resistance? Not only a unique rocket or missile. Mention, name me one Arab government from the countries of the Arab Spring or other than outside the Arab Spring, from the kingdoms or the Emirates. Not one shotgun, one bullet. Then we have a leadership in Syria subject to an air raid just 2 days after it says, I will give them weapons which they haven't received before. This was a Syrian strategic response. This is even bigger than sending, than bombing the occupied Palestine or launching an air raid on occupied Palestine. It's bigger than that. Number two, okay, you the Israelis, what are you saying? What's your goal? You want Syria to be out of the equation of the resistance against you, against Israel? Okay, the second strategic response, which is no less significant, is the Golan Heights front. Opening the door for the popular resistance in the Golan Heights. This is natural. All those who used to criticize the Syrian leadership with respect to the Golan Heights, we used to say that in Lebanon there is room for resistance because the world considers that the central state is weak and so the state must not pay the price for the efforts of resistance. However, Syria has a strong central state which doesn't leave room for resistance. However, in the war which you imposed on Syria, you transformed the threat into an opportunity. You imposed a war on Syria to weaken Syria. This means that there is now room to create resistance, popular resistance in the Golan Heights. So let's go ahead now with the popular resistance. This is also a strategic response from Syria. Number three, and it doesn't concern me, of course, it concerns the Syrian armed forces. We've prepared the launching pads. We've directed them towards Palestine. We're returning to the leadership. We're not going back to leadership. This terrified the Israelis, created fear amongst the Israelis. And the Israelis took measures and they sent messages of reassurance, sent messages to make sure the situation will calm down. However, what does this response mean? Its political significance. What does it mean? If you want me to back down, no, I gave my orders to my forces to respond. Who has the courage amongst all of the Arabs? Who has the courage to take such a step? Now, usually after I end, some people say that the Sayyid Hassan was very angry or very enthusiastic. I'm not, but however, this is just the nature of the occasion. The speech and the occasion. We will meet them, of course. And in the third response, leave it aside. In the first response, yes, we in the resistance in Lebanon, we announce that we are ready. We are ready to receive any unique weapons, even if it breaks the balance with the enemy. And we are ready to preserve and maintain these weapons. And we are capable of possessing these weapons. And we will use these weapons to prevent an aggression against our country and against our sanctities and our people. And with respect to the second point, just as Syria stood side by side with the Lebanese people and supported its popular resistance financially, morally, until this resistance was able to liberate South Lebanon, On the other hand, we in the Lebanese resistance, we announce that we stand side by side with the Syrian popular resistance, and we will provide our financial and moral support and coordination in order to liberate the Syrian Golan Heights. And with respect to the third response, it's very big. Let's not talk about it now. My dear brothers and sisters, it's not enthusiasm, it's not about enthusiasm, nor about making strong speeches. In a very calm way, very calmly, let everybody take a look at the situation in the region. Everybody who takes a look can understand that the recent experience and the stances made by the Syrian leadership show that this leadership has strong nerves. I am speaking according to experience. We all know what it means, a war, waging a war. Of course, being subject to bombings, air raids, buildings collapsing around you. Experience shows that this Syrian leadership has strong nerves and it has great wisdom, and it is managing the confrontation with Israel strategically without hastiness or exaggerated enthusiasm. This is what I understand from the events which took place over the last few days. I'd like to also assure you that this axis, the axis of resistance, which made achievements and achieved victories from the 1990s until today, this axis, which was able to overthrow many plots, colonial plots and plots of occupation and hegemony on our region and our countries, this axis was able to make these achievements because it was calm, wise, because it was solid, because it was courageous, because it works seriously, and this is what will achieve victory in the future, God willing. And here I'd like to go back and bring two issues together. For those who want Al-Aqsa Mosque to remain for its rightful owners, for those who want the Christian and Islamic sanctities in Palestine to remain for their rightful owners, for those who want Al-Quds to go back to the Palestinian people and the Ummah, for all those people who want to fulfill the rights of the Palestinians and fulfill the aspirations of the Palestinians, not in the Arab League, neither in the United Nations, nor in the Security Council, nor in the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC, nor anywhere else. I'll go back to what I said. Go back to the beginning. From the beginning, the choice was resistance. And today the choice is resistance. And to all the Palestinian people, I say, and to all the people of a region, I say, all the people who reject Israeli hegemony on your countries, you will not find anyone who will stand side by side with you except those who stood in support of you for decades. You won't find anyone except those who stood in support of you for decades. Things are getting worse and worse, and so come and preserve those who used to stand with you. Come and preserve the strong foundations of your axis, because hopes are pinned on this axis. So any serious efforts to achieve a political settlement in Syria and a political solution in Syria, and any efforts to prevent Syria from falling into the hands of the US and the Israelis and the Takfiris. This is the battle of Palestine. This is the battle of Al-Quds. This is the battle of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Very clearly. Stop this conspiracy and let all the honorable people, all the remaining honorable and free people in the Islamic world, and there are a lot of them, and let them work on this settlement. It is rude in the end and shameful for the Americans who coordinated in destroying Syria, as if the Americans are saving Syria via a political solution. And the Arab League then is the one which destroyed Syria, and the OIC destroyed Syria. This is shameful, historically shameful. the Arab countries and the Islamic countries must realize what happens before it receives its orders from the Great Master. It must save its face and must seek God's forgiveness and must address these matters. Because as time goes by, the more the time goes by, the more we'll have bloodshed and destruction and losses. For the interest of who? For the interest of the Israeli enemy. This is our stance very clearly. And this is how we comment on what happened and what is happening. I still have a few words to mention, or a few words I want to say about Lebanon. Regarding the internal situation in Lebanon, unfortunately here in this country, everybody is exerting efforts. However, everybody points a finger of accusation against the other. Some accuse others of being behind the vacuum, and different accusations are being spread. We want a government to be formed in Lebanon as soon as possible. We want a new electoral law to be ratified in the parliament. We want elections to be held on the date. A technical delay is something normal. That's no problem. We want all this to happen. And I say that our situation is very good. Some people speak on television something, but we know what they say in the corridors, in private sessions, and we know as well all of those who were disappointed and those who made mistaken analysis. And the breeze of the wind now is going opposite. Look, if you want elections now, okay, we're ready for elections now. You want elections after, we're ready for that as well. We are not pushing for a delay of the elections. We support holding elections and forming a government. Now, with respect to forming the government, in order not to speak only about the general points, we dealt and we are dealing with the issue of a government formation in a different way than the March 14 movement after naming Najib Miqati. Our group named Najib Miqati. They didn't name Najib Miqati, of course, and they didn't give him a vote of confidence. He proposed participation of March 14 in a national unity government. The March 14 refused. We didn't even reach the stage of their share in the national unity government. They completely rejected. After that, they waged a blind war and they called on all the countries of the world to boycott the government of Najib Miqati and the prime minister of Miqati and described it as a Hezbollah government. And for 2 years, the incitement in the media didn't give it a chance, burning tires, blocking roads, protests and confrontations. The aim of all of this was to overthrow the government of Najib Miqati. Okay, what happened happened. It's not the time now to go into analysis. Najib Miqati resigned as prime minister, and then the other group, March 14, named prime minister designate Tamam Salam. March 14 named him. Let's not kid ourselves. They named him. And March 14 named someone from their group. Tamam Salam is part of March 14. And we, our group, we approved the naming of Tamam Salam and we dealt with it positively because we found that Tamam Salam is someone who we can deal with, a balanced person, a calm person who we can work with. And this opens the door and gives a chance for the country to come. Let's go ahead. Let's put the country together. Let's form a national unity government, a government of national partnership, a government of national salvation, name it what you want, not a government of challenge, not to form a government of challenge. Anyway, people want to participate. Of course, people want to be part so that they can feel that they are partners. If this government is only the government to hold elections, I'm speaking according to their language. From our point of view, it's not only a government assigned with the task of preparing the elections. If the prime minister designate or those who are participating in forming the government, if its only task is to forming a cabinet, is to form a, sorry, to prepare elections, what's the difference? From our perspective, there is a difference. When we call for our group to participate according to the parliamentary shares in between brackets, I'm not speaking about shares in reality, I'm speaking about parliamentary shares, how much we have a representation in parliament. Parliamentary representation doesn't reflect the situation on the ground. The problem with the electoral law is that everybody is putting together different laws. Why? Because this law brings a majority, that law doesn't bring the majority. So each side is working for its own interest. So the electoral law and parliamentary elections don't reflect real popular support in Lebanon. We are not calling for our representation in cabinet to be in accordance with our popular support in the country, however, to be in accordance with our share in the parliament, our representation in the parliament. And we consider this government is not only for preparing for the elections, even if it comes to power for 1, 2, or 3 months, it's concerned with the country, with the civil peace and with economy, social issues, even if it's only going to be in office for 1 week. It cannot stay away from these responsibilities. So it is right that everybody feel that he's a partner, real partner, in this process, in this government. Now, in the constitution, they say this isn't written. What does the constitution say? Constitution doesn't make any clear statements in this regard. The constitution says you can put together any government, nationality, you can give in accordance with parliamentary representation, you can give in accordance with popular support, you can ignore the whole world, you can find any constitutional fatwa. Let's not put down the constitution as an excuse. Yes, Prime Minister Designate, we support forming a government of a national interest at the current, in the midst of the current internal and regional situation, and in light of the Israeli assault on Syria and the increased Israeli assaults on Lebanon, daily Israeli assaults on Lebanon, and in light of the tension in the region as a whole, the national interest requires the formation of a government of national partnership in order not to stop focusing on 1, 2, or 3 if this provides real national partnership. And so I'd like to say that let's not waste time in this matter. This issue, our group wants to have representation according to the percentage of the parliament or the level of representation in parliament. 1, 2 days or 1, 2, 3 weeks, we're just wasting time. I'm not closing the door for room to maneuver. I am being frank because there are some people who are saying that there are some who are disrupting the formation of the government because they want the current caretaker government to remain. No, go ahead, form a government according to appropriate representation and reassure everyone that nobody is a target, and then tomorrow maybe a government could be formed. Now, a few words to say very briefly regarding the electoral law. We are approaching the date of the May the 15th. Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri announced that parliamentary sessions will be held on May 15th and the following days as well. Of course, the parliamentary committees have handed over the proposal for the orthodox electoral law. I'd like to say that if this is proposed for a vote, I don't want to explain the details because even with our allies, we have some disagreements. We spoke about details before. If this is proposed for a vote, we will vote in support of the orthodox electoral law, and we showed commitment to this. Whoever be those who voted or didn't vote, because we gave our word and we made our statements and we were very clear. We were not maneuvering, nor were we wasting time. No. We were very clear in this perspective. Now, this law, if it's subject to a vote in the parliament, then it will go through the constitutional steps, because then we have the stance of the president and the stance of the constitutional committee or council. If we assume that the law wasn't ratified in the parliament, then frankly, our group, our alliance, isn't in agreement regarding the alternative to that law. To be frank and honest with you, we haven't agreed to another option. And even considering, okay, let's wait for the 15th of May. If they vote, okay. If they don't vote on the orthodox electoral law, we will sit down. We all have memorized the lesson. The same night, next day, we will hold consultations. We will see what the alternative is in light of the consultations held on the 15th of May. The approach of the issue of electoral law seems to be heading to this point. If the orthodox law isn't passed, then will another law receive majority in the parliament? I don't believe anybody has a clear vision in this perspective. It will be left to the nature of the sessions and the discussions and the short time period. We, the Lebanese, you know what we're doing to ourselves. We are all, of course, shortening the time and buying time. So to see in the end, will something happen? Will we make an achievement or not? However, of course, we don't support vacuum in the country. Hezbollah doesn't support vacuum in the country. The other choices, other than vacuum, we will discuss them. We are open to discussing them. We only reject vacuum in the country. Now, two more sentences regarding the issue of the Lebanese pilgrims kidnapped in Syria and what is going on with respect to this subject. I'd like to say that what we should do, we have done. We've done what we should have done, and God willing, the positive, where there will be a positive ending, what remains is with the state, because we want the process to go ahead. We don't want to work on it in politics. I just want to reassure you that we have done what we should do, and it is a positive situation. And the final point, the shellings which we see, some shelling. Today, for example, two missiles landed in the Hermel area near the Lebanese border with Syria. I'd like to tell the people of Hermel and Shawaghir and Husha Sayyid Ali, all those border areas with Syria, you are putting up with this because this is the fine which all the Syrian people are paying and some Lebanese are paying. This is part of the fine which we must pay, and we must accept this. Of course, we must work on addressing it, and I believe that it will be addressed, God willing. Once again, I would like to congratulate the brothers and sisters in the Nord radio station and all the media personnel in the resistance, all the media personnel who support the resistance and who followed the resistance in any media outlet, in any position. I thank you, I salute you, I appreciate your efforts, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and I hope 25 more years will pass.
Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah there talking from Lebanon in a celebration hosted by the Al Nur radio station on the occasion of its silver jubilee of its launch. Now, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah touched upon a few subjects. I'm going to just highlight some of them. He talked about how the enemy knows the resistance will play and win a balanced psychological war, in reference to basically, given that this was the launch of a radio station, of the role of the media. He said, unfortunately, satellite news channels have been deceptive in the way they have revealed the news, up to the point that there's been many fabrications that have been made. Dangers facing Palestinian territories was another subject that he touched on. And he said that he made a reference to the Arab Spring, and he said that he thought that with the Arab Spring that it would bring people into holding on to their rights through the officials, the new officials that would then be in charge. But he said that the Arab foreign ministers standing next to the U.S. Secretary of State, well, they went ahead and gave very dangerous concessions and privileges to the enemy. And he said that was also the case in the terms of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. He said that Al-Quds is being Judaized. He talked about the Mufti of Al-Quds being arrested and Palestinians being arrested. This was in reference to Israeli forces yesterday who actually went ahead with some arrest of Palestinians in terms of clashes that took place there. But another reference to the Judaization, he said, what does it mean to recognize the Jewish nature of Israel? He said it represents a danger to the struggle of Palestinians that this land may have belonged to the Jews in some form or another, so that that should not happen. But it's interesting, and for lack of time, I'm going to touch upon what he did say regarding Israel's multiple aerial raids on Syria. He said that Israel wants Syria to be out of the equation of the resistance of which he mentioned would be Lebanon and Iran. And he said that Israel, by these air raids, are saying that we won't allow weapons to reach the resistance in Lebanon. And this is where it was interesting of what he said, that the weapons will reach Lebanon. He said that Syria will continue to arm the resistance with unique weapons that the resistance has not received before. I thought that was a pretty interesting point that he made there. And another interesting point, he said Syria is a battle for Palestine and Al-Quds. He also touched about some domestic issues regarding Lebanon. We'll try to round up all the important points made by the Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah and give it to you at half past the hour when we give you international news here on Press TV. We're going to return back to regular programming. Hezbollah leader says Israel's goal in its recent attacks on Syria has been to force Damascus to abandon support for the resistance. Seyed Hassan Nasrallah says the attacks were part of an Israeli ongoing campaign to prevent the resistance from becoming stronger. But he says the Syrian leadership has foiled Israel's plots through a wise, logical, and strategic approach. Nasrallah says Hezbollah has been enjoying a strong support from Syria, like that of no other Arab country. He says his movement will stand by the Syrian resistance against Israel, specifically in its struggle to free the Golan Heights. Nasrallah also says Hezbollah has the capability to obtain what he described as unique weapons that could be used to defend Lebanon against the enemies. Let's bring in Ali Risk, our correspondent from Beirut, to find out what he thinks about the speech made there by Hezbollah's Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. Ali Risk, I'm curious about the statement that Hassan Nasrallah made about the unique weapons, but of course your input about some of the other highlights from his speech there.
Well, unique weapons is an Israeli term. Israelis use the term actually balance breaking weapons, which they have pledged should not reach Hezbollah. But I think that you have to put it in the perspective of the goals, what he said, the Israeli goals of the aggression and how the Syrian response was. I think what he tried to say, if you noticed, he said that, you know, the least we can do is prevent the enemy from achieving his goals. And then again, if it's possible, we can even make it backfire on me. And I think that when he mentioned that Syria will deliver unique weapons, I think what he was trying to say is that Syria, together with the resistance axis, has made this Israeli step back logistical role in resistance. For example, the passageway of weapons from Iran to Syria onto Hezbollah, also a passageway of weapons to the resistance factions in the occupied territories, the Palestinian resistance factions. Now another element has been added to Syria's role of resistance, which is the front of the Golan Heights. That is the new element, and what that means is a new source of anxiety for Israel, a new source of concern, in particular because Israel thought that the Syrian crisis, what is going on in Syria, is serving its own interests because it's weakening one of the integral parts of the resistance bloc. However, I think the message he tried to say is that the Israeli aggression, the Israeli assault, will actually only strengthen or put Syria deeper into the resistance bloc, because now we have an additional role, which is the Golan Heights front, meaning a bigger national security threat, if we could say, for Israel. If you allow me as well, just to quickly also touch on the sequence, Palestine, of course, then Syria. Very important, the message he tried to convey is that if Assad falls, or if this leadership falls, then the Palestinian cause will die. I think in indirect words, that is what he was saying, because the sequence was Palestine, Israel taking advantage of the opportunities to enhance its policies, and some indirect words for Hamas as well to stay or to preserve its stance in the resistance bloc. And then he went ahead and spoke about Syria, and the battle for Syria is the battle for Palestine. So very, very important intertwining or linkage between Syria and its integral role with Palestine, and the Assad leadership, and how he relates to the Palestinian, his role with the Palestinian cause.
Very well, that's true. The sequence you said there, very important. Thank you very much, as usual. Great insight. Ali Wissa, correspondent there, talking from Beirut.